at her house. Yeah, baby? She came to her window and opened it, leaned her forearms on the sill.
Good, right?
It's perfect. She laughed and made a shooing motion, then retreated back into her place. I laughed and shut my window. My new cell phone chimed a text. It was Theo. Wanted to make sure you got in okay. I smiled. Nope. Not alone at all. On Thursday, I showed up for work at Le Chacal, right on time. Singing sober wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. The tears still came at the end of the lighthouse. But instead of being walled off from my audience by alcohol, I could feel the intense emotion working its way through the crowd. No one drank, whispered, or moved during the song. When it ended, I heard a collective intake of breath before the applause. Thank you, I murmured into the mic, feeling strangely shy. I left the stage and took my guitar to my usual seat at the bar. Biggie planted his hands on either side of the old wood, grinning.
What'll it be, sweets?
Seltzer with lime, please. I slapped a $10 bill on the bar. And keep 'em coming. He bellowed laughter and set the drink in front of me.
You done good, kid. How do you feel?
It's weird, I said. I've played shows 100 times bigger than this, but this was the first time I felt nervous. It's so intimate in here. I can't hide anything. I either play my guts out or stay home.
I'm glad you didn't stay home,
Biggie said.
I'm proud of you.
Thanks, E, I said. And thanks for... He held up his hands.
Nope. No thanks required. Just doing my job.
What is it with guys and gratitude? Teddy's the same way. Wouldn't hear a thank you if I paid him. Biggie shrugged.
Real men take care of the women in their lives as a matter of course. Not because they want something in return.
His words warmed me better than a shot of whiskey. Not even a thank you?
Not even that.
I laughed and rolled my eyes. Theo definitely takes care of the women in his life, I said. His mother, me. If he ever settled down with a woman, I'll bet she'd be spoiled for the rest of her life. Big E frowned.
What about you?
What about me?
I thought.
He looked about to say something else, then shrugged.
Never mind.
I was about to press him when I felt a tap on my shoulder. I turned to see a young couple, maybe in their late 20s. The guy had short, dark hair and black framed hipster glasses, a Buddy Holly throwback. The girl had long, free-flowing red hair and a bohemian-looking dress splashed with flowers.
Miss Dawson?
The guy said. He had to pitch his voice high above the jazz trio now on stage.
My name is Grant Olson. This is my sister, Phoebe.
Nice to meet you, I said, smiling politely. Grant said nothing else. I looked from one to the other, my smile starting to slip. Phoebe elbowed her brother in the side. Talk, she hissed.
Right.
Grant adjusted his glasses.
We own a small recording studio.
Like, totally small, Phoebe added, but still legit.
Yes, legit.
Grant fumbled in his pocket for a business card and handed it to me.
I'm a sound engineer. Phoebe produces. Can we talk with you a minute? Buy you a drink?
I agreed to the first, declined the second. We sat at a small table where the Olsons described their studio and their commitment to producing local indie artists.
We really love your work,
Grant said, pushing his glasses higher up on his nose.
Your voice, the lyrics, very unique, poignant.
You're like if Brandi Carlile and Adele had a love child, Phoebe said.
Oh, no,
I said, shaking my head. That's nice of you to say, but nothing, Phoebe said, fishing a cherry out of her drink. Great vocals and emotional lyrics. Dream combo. She bit the cherry and pointed the stem at me. And you used to play for Rapid Confession. A lifetime ago, I said. I'm not interested in playing off that. I'm doing my own thing now. The band is doing theirs. She exchanged looks with her brother, and then Grant said,
We love that. Honestly, we want to help you do your own thing now. We noticed you don't sell CDs prior to your shows, and we can't find any digital tracks anywhere either.
Because I don't have any, I said.
We'd like to change that.
We talked for an hour, Grant and Phoebe laying out a plan for me to record and produce an album, all the songs I'd been playing at these clubs. It could be sold both digitally and as a physical CD.
Can we give you a tour of our recording studio tomorrow?
Grant asked at the end of his pitch. He held up his hands.
Or later in the week? No pressure, no obligations. Just come over and check it out.
I twirled my empty seltzer glass around and around. I'd never heard these songs from an audience perspective. Recording and then listening to them filled me with a strange fear. It would be easy to say no. Easy to say, thanks, but no thanks. I was happy as is. But I wasn't happy. And doing what scared me was the only way I was going to recover. I didn't need a tarot card to tell me. Tomorrow is good, I said to Grant and Phoebe. Why wait? The Olsons hadn't been lying. Their studio was tiny, but it was also completely professional. It looked like a miniature of the studio where Rapid Confession recorded before the tour. A dim, windowless rectangle, separated by glass into two spaces. The recording area was hardly big enough for a band, but would accommodate one chick on a stool with her guitar perfectly well. On the other side of the glass, the soundboard took up half the space. A vast array of knobs, buttons, sliders, and other functions I had no clue about. Posters of indie shows and bands papered the walls of the sound booth, while dark gray, foamy-looking stuff, like the inside of egg cartons, covered the walls in the recording space. The whole place reeked of old incense. I loved the vibe of it immediately. Grant rubbed the back of his neck and gave Phoebe a dark look.
I know it's not much, and I keep telling Phoebe to chill with the incense.
Start wearing deodorant and I'll consider it, Phoebe snapped.
I wear deodorant? Christ, you say something like that in front of a potential client?
They bickered under their breath at each other until I unstrapped my guitar case and set it down like I was unpacking a bag. Then they stopped and stared. So, I said, taking a deep breath. When can we start? Back home, I curled around the universe orb and told Jonah about the new developments. It might be the right thing for me, I said. I usually had a cocktail in hand for these conversations. I clutched the glass tighter instead. Or it might not. See, those songs, I've never heard them outside of myself. What if it's too hard? It was already too hard. I wiped my tears. Teddy took me to see your glass when I was in Vegas. And it was so beautiful, Jonah. Your legacy. But remember what you told me in your letter? That our love was your legacy, too? The tears were streaming now, but somehow a smile stretched my lips. These songs, they're our legacy. They're us. Love, you and me. And I think I should share them. How does that sound? It sounded good to me. It sounded right. Maybe recording this album, making those songs permanent, instead of watery breaths in a darkened club that dissipated into the smoky air, was what I was supposed to do. It could be a way to let him go. I sighed and laid my head next to the glass. My sore eyes grew heavy, watching the glowing stars swirl around the planet. I slipped into the twilight space between sleep and awake, and felt Jonah with me. And he was smiling. Chapter 15. Casey. 3 weeks later, the album was nearly finished. I still hadn't heard the whole thing mixed. I'd laid down the guitar track first, then the vocals. Only bits and pieces got played back for me. I didn't know what kind of impact it would make on the music world either, despite the fact that Grant and Phoebe were in a state of perpetual giddiness. They assured me over and over again it was going to be a huge hit. Even at 99 cents a song, you can make a killing if just one goes big, Grant told me, his eyes bright behind his glasses. You can buy a lot of booze, too, I thought. An echo of my rapid confession days, when success wasn't necessarily a good thing. We wrapped it up on a Thursday night. Back home, I changed from my recording attire of sloppy jeans and t-shirt to the nicer jeans and blouse for my gig at Le Chacal that night. My cell phone buzzed a text from Theo. You up? I typed back, thumbs flying. You realize that's the internationally recognized code for booty call, right? Nothing for a minute. Then, dirty mind, I was innocently asking if you're awake. There's nothing innocent about you, Teddy. It's only 8 p.m. here, and you know it. What's up? You working tongue? I laughed. No, my tongue has the night off. Tonight. I mean tonight. Fucking autocorrect. Calling. Theo hated texting because he made so many typos. Which was fine with me. I preferred hearing his voice anyway. I liked its deep roughness in my ear. My phone rang. Yes, I'm working tonight, I said. I need the money to pay my gigantic phone bill.
You're telling me, Theo replied. I had to take out a small loan after you kept me up until 4 in the morning last week.
All you had to do was concede The Princess Bride is the most quotable movie in existence, and I would have let you off.
I grinned, remembering how Theo tried to argue Monty Python's The Holy Grail had earned that title.
I'd badgered him with, inconceivable, until he gave up.
Don't start, he said. Or I'll fart in your general direction.
I had no idea stern-faced Theodore was a huge Monty Python fan. But during our marathon conversations, I learned he could quote the entire Holy Grail and Life of Brian movies almost verbatim, accents and all. These monster phone sessions started out as him checking in on me. Brief chats, once or twice a week, making sure I was okay. The craving for booze was constant. On bad days, it flared into an insatiable thirst, laced with grief for Jonah. On good days, it was background noise, sometimes hardly noticeable. The good days, I noticed, were growing more and more frequent. I had friends now. Yvonne next door, Big E. Even Grant and Phoebe were more like friends than business partners. And I had Teddy, who now called me almost every day.
So,
he said.
Oscar and Dina's wedding.
Yes, next Saturday. I'm so excited, especially since my bridesmaid dress isn't a total nightmare. I glanced at the coral-colored strapless dress hanging high on the door of my bedroom. Not really my style, but it's pretty. Just the right color for a spring wedding. Theo grunted in acknowledgement of the girly dress talk, and then said,
When are you flying in?
Friday, I said. I'll be there in time for the rehearsal dinner.
Cool.
You don't sound super thrilled about it.
I never should have agreed to be the best man. It's going to suck.
Why? Not a fan of making toasts in front of hundreds of strangers?
Something like that,
he muttered.
Anyway, are you bringing anyone?
I blinked. You mean, like a date?
Yeah.
God, no. I'm so not ready for that. I plucked at my duvet, making little wrinkles in the material. Are you?
No,
he said. A small smile spread over my face, and I smoothed the duvet down. Why not?
There's no one I want to fly all the way to New York,
he said.
That's an expensive date.
Good point, I said. Oscar and Dina were getting married at an exclusive club Oscar's parents belonged to in upstate New York. The East Coast location was easier on Dina's grandparents, both in their 80s, who had to fly from Tehran via London to the U.S. So, we can be each other's date, I said. At the least, you can save me a dance or two, so I'm not sitting alone at the table all night like a pathetic loser.
You're not a pathetic loser,
he said darkly.
And I don't dance.
Yeah, right, I laughed. You'll have to beat the single ladies off you with a stick. Maybe the married ones, too.
That's not happening.
You sure about that? I said, grinning. Admitting you have a problem is the first step toward recovery. You're going to look amazing in a tux, Teddy.
Yeah, yeah.
I glanced at the clock. I gotta go soon. I have my LaChapelle gig tonight.
You don't sound super thrilled about it,
he said. I smiled at his echo of my words. I know. I've been more focused on recording. We finish tomorrow. The Olsons I keep telling you about? Turns out they really know their shit. They said the album might be ready by the time I get back from New York.
Already?
Not a lot of mixing and mastering to do when it's just one voice and a guitar. Although they did talk me into letting a local violinist play background on a few tracks. I'm actually kind of excited about it.
That's a good thing, then?
I plucked the duvet again. I think so. I'm nervous to hear it. Okay, no. I'm scared shitless to hear it, from an outsider perspective.
Take your time. Don't listen until you're ready.
When did you become so wise?
Born that way.
I caught sight of the clock again. Oh, shit. I really gotta run.
Tell Big E I said hi,
Theo said. I will. Text you later?
I'll be here.
Bye, Teddy.
Bye, Case.
Chapter 16. Casey. My flight landed in Albany the afternoon before the wedding, and I just made it to the rehearsal dinner at a ritzy steakhouse. Dina had 6 bridesmaids, and I was thrilled to see Tanya King, Jonah's former assistant, was one of them. We hugged and cried a little. Just seeing her brought back a flood of memories. She confided she was thrilled I was there for a more practical reason. Aside from the Fletchers, I literally know no one here, she said. Hey, I'm in the same boat. She looped her arm through my elbow. Oh, thank God, you're mine. We stuck to each other at dinner, too, and Tanya told me all about her work for the Tahuli studio in Seattle. It's incredible, she said over clam chowder. I wake up every morning thinking, holy shit, this is my life now. Thanks in no small part to Jonah. She leaned in close to me, her voice dropping. Honestly, and I hate to even say this, but tomorrow is going to be hard without him here. The gaping hole in my life. It's easier to ignore it in Seattle, but here, around all of his friends. Her dark eyes trailed down the table, taking inventory of each guest. I can't even imagine how hard this must be for Oscar and Dina. My gaze trailed to the happy couple at the end of the long table. On Oscar's left sat Theo, looking handsome in slacks and a dress shirt. No tie, his sleeves rolled up to his forearms, dark ink swirling down to his wrists. "And how are you?" Tanya asked gently. "I heard you moved out of Vegas." She'd probably been too busy with her job to know too much about my situation, and part of me wanted to smile and make light of it. But my personal recovery plan was to be as honest as I could with everyone. "Yeah, I moved. I couldn't hack it. I live in New Orleans now." I stirred my soup. "That's the sanitized version of what happened. The Black Plague version is, I ran out of town without telling anyone where I was going and spent the last 6 months in New Orleans drunk off my ass." Tanya's eyebrows shot up, but then she nodded. "Okay." Theo found me, dropped everything to help me sober up, and it wasn't any goddamn picnic for him, I can tell you. Now I'm here, all dressed up for a wedding, instead of dead in a ditch somewhere. "I'm so happy you're here." Tanya's eyes glanced at Theo. "He's a rock, that guy." "How so?" She spooned a bite of soup, then dabbed her napkin to her mouth. "You know, I was Jonah's assistant in the hot shop. Carnegie Mellon paid me to do that job. But for an installation the size Jonah envisioned, I didn't think two people could complete it on time. I couldn't be there every minute. I had my own classes at UNLV. So Theo stepped in. He'd never worked with glass before. Jonah and I showed him the basics, and it just clicked for him. The job needed to be done, and he was going to do it. He just went for it, all in. And when the installation was finished, I got all the credit for the assist. I tried to get Theo to put his name on the paperwork for the win show. Jonah tried. Hell, Jonah was about to do it without Theo's permission. But Theo sidestepped us, went to Emmy Takamura directly, and told her his name wasn't to appear anywhere with relation to the installation. Why wouldn't he take any credit? Tanya shrugged. That's just how he is. So it doesn't surprise me in the least he dropped everything to fly to you when you needed him. It's what he does. If there's a job to do, he does it. I nodded, thinking about Theo being best man for Oscar. Jonah would have done it. Tanya had grown quiet. I saw her jaw work and her eyes fixed on the water glass in front of her. I covered her hand with mine. "Hey." She smiled, not looking at me. "God, I miss him like hell." "I know." The words held the deepest, hardest truth for everyone in this room. "I miss you, Jonah. We all miss you." It was easy to feel like I suffered the most, to believe the bulk of the pain was mine to choke down. An enormous mouthful, while everyone else only had to chew little bites. But everyone who'd known Jonah had a plate of pain to swallow. Every instinct screamed to change the subject before I started crying again. But instead, I squeezed Tanya's fingers. "Jonah couldn't have finished the installation if it hadn't been for you," I said. "I know for a fact he considered you one of his best friends. He loved you like hell. That's why you miss him like hell." "Thanks, Case." Tanya smiled and swiped away a tear. "I know he did, but it's nice when someone else says it." The next morning, we drove in a cavalcade of sedans to the Centennial Club, 20 minutes outside Albany. The club was a stately 18th-century manor, with many gables piercing its red roof. I sat on a huge field of grass, like an island floating on a flat green sea. Dina and her bridesmaids, along with her mother and grandmother, were ensconced in one wing of the big manor, while Oscar and his menfolk were on the other. The ceremony would be in the sprawling backyard that looked more like a football field, and the reception in the grand ballroom. In the east wing, the bridesmaids slipped on our coral-colored dresses, while Dina had her hair and makeup tended to. The strapless dresses had crisscrossing folds over the bodice, cascaded to the floor in soft lengths of silk. Dina's mother, an elegant-looking woman in a more modest dress the same shade of orange-pink as ours, fussed over her daughter, while Dina's 80-year-old grandmother sat in a chair and watched. Both the mother and grandmother gave me a few side glances, as did two of the bridesmaids I'd never met before. I looked at myself in the full-length mirror. The tattoo swirling down my right arm and the guitar on the inside of my left wrist painted a stark contrast to the billowy pastel of the dresses. Dina approached me, her knowing, peaceful smile on her face. She looked radiant and far calmer than any bride-to-be I'd ever seen.
"Casey," she said softly, "you look beautiful."
"That's my line. Dina, you're stunning." I rubbed my arms, as if I could rub out the tattoos just for today. "Not too sure the ink goes with the dress." Dina reached for the tray of hairdresser's ribbons, pins, and brushes, and took up a black silk rose.
"Do you think I'd forgotten you had these tattoos when I picked out the dress?"
"No, but I can feel your grandmother staring," I said. "I want this day to be perfect for you." Her grin widened as she affixed the silk flower behind my left ear.
"Today will be perfect because the people I love are here, just as they are."
I inspected myself in the mirror. None of the other bridesmaids had a black flower, but none of them had ink all up their arms either. But I had to admit, the black rose was a perfect accessory, complementing my tattoos and bringing the whole look together. Tanya approached.
"You're the most badass bridesmaid I've ever seen," she said, looking resplendent in her own dress. She linked her arm in mine. "Come on, it's time to rock and roll."
We descended the stairs, and a harried-looking wedding planner jostled us into place. Dina was like a cloud of calm, floating among us in her white silk dress, while the rest of us fluttered around her like nervous birds. A cellist played Pachelbel's Canon in D, and we took our turns marching out of the house and between the rows of white chairs set up on the lawn. Oscar and his groomsmen were already under a white awning, wreathed in green vines and pink flowers. I took my turn down the aisle, paranoid my heels were going to dig too deep into the lush grass and send me sprawling in front of everyone. How would that be for badass? Oscar looked handsome in his tux, but a bit petrified. My eyes found Theo standing beside him, in a tux.
Oh, wow.
He looked devastatingly handsome. His dark hair slicked back, his hands clasped in front of him where cufflinks glinted in the sun. His expression was flat with boredom until he caught sight of me. His mouth fell open a little and his eyes widened. I smiled at him, tried a little wave behind my small bouquet of white roses. Theo didn't respond, but stared at me in that way he had, like he couldn't believe I was real. I thought he was playing around, but as I neared my place on the platform, his stare hardened, and then he suddenly looked away.
Okay, then.
The ceremony was the perfect length. not too short to make all the fuss seem excessive, and not too long that anyone grew impatient. Oscar and Dina exchanged traditional vows, then kissed as the sun sank beneath them. The crowd cheered, and the procession returned to the house for the reception. For the recessional, I was paired up with a buddy of Oscar's. Theo naturally escorted the maid of honor, who clutched his arm snugly, I noticed. She giggled something in his ear that he ignored. Once inside the manor house, Theo ignored me too. The bridal party took photos with Oscar and Dina, then we were free to enjoy the cocktails and hors d'oeuvres being served in a grand sitting room. A cellist played in the corner under the muted conversations of 100 guests. Over a little plate of snacks, Beverly gushed over Theo, Tanya, and I. Henry made me promise to save him a dance, even though his eyes strayed to my tattoos more than once while we chatted. Theo didn't say a word. "What's wrong, dear?" Beverly asked. "Nervous for your toast?"
"Yeah," he muttered, "I guess."
I pulled him aside. "Hey, how you holding up? For real?"
"For real? I fucking hate giving speeches."
"Picture everyone in their underwear. I hear that helps."
"I picture everyone thinking, Jonah should be up there."
The smile fell off my face like a paper mask. "Teddy," I said softly.
"It was already hard without him here. I'm making it 10 times worse."
"That's not true," I said. He glanced around darkly.
"Isn't it? It's what I'm thinking. Jonah and Oscar were best friends. I'm like a bad stand-in."
"That's not true," I said, gripping his arm. "We all miss Jonah.
But no one thinks that you're the consolation prize,"
Theo said, meeting my eyes for the first time.
"Forget it. I just want to get this over with."
He downed his flute of champagne and set it down on a small table. "You're going to do great," I said. His expression softened as he took in my dress, my hair, and then his gaze swept over my face. He looked about to say something, but changed his mind, his features hardening again.
"Oscar should have picked someone else,"
he said, and walked away. I started to follow after, to tell him that Oscar picked him because he wanted him. But the wedding planner threw open the doors to the grand ballroom, and the guests flowed in, carrying me on the current. A collective gasp went up as we stepped inside. The wooden floors gleamed in the light of a dozen different sources. Delicate chandeliers on the ceiling, sconces on the wall, and incredible centerpieces on each of the round tables. Flowers, silverware, and delicate porcelain place settings were simply arranged but incredibly elegant. I could see Dina's hand in all of this. A round table swathed in shimmery red gold tablecloth was laden with bowls of poppy seeds and rice, little cups of rice, black tea leaves, and other seeds I couldn't name. Silver platters held baklava, rice cookies, and almond cookies. A mirror in a silver setting and 2 candelabras made up the centerpiece. I overheard a man tell his partner that the mirror and candles represented light and fire. "Light and fire," I murmured to myself when I saw that my place card had me seated between Tanya and Theo. But my smile faded when it was clear Theo wouldn't even look at me. And when he did, he squinted and looked away, as if I hurt his eyes. When it was time for his toast, he stood up with grim determination, a piece of paper from one hand and a glass of champagne in the other. "He's a rock," I thought. "He does the job." The room grew hushed as Theo studied the words written on the paper.
"Fuck this,"
he muttered under his breath, and tossed the paper down, then faced the crowd.
I've known Oscar for about 20 years, he said. Since we were kids. I met him through Jonah. For those of you who don't know who Jonah is, he was my brother and Oscar's best friend. For those of you who did know Jonah, you know I'd much rather be listening to him get up here and talk instead of doing it myself. I can't help but feel he's laughing at me wherever he is, because he knows how much I hate this kind of shit. Sorry.
The crowd murmured laughter, and I thought I could feel a collective sigh of relief, as if the elephant in the room had been acknowledged.
Oscar and Dina were made for each other,
Theo continued.
There's not a whole lot more to say than that. She's the calm to his storm, the poetry to his dirty jokes, the opera to his football game. Each fills the gaps in the other. They lift each other up and stick together when shit gets rough.
He coughed another sorry, and the audience laughed.
But they have more in common than you think. They're both the best people I've ever known. They're both generous to each other and to their friends. They have more love in their hearts than many people have in their little finger. We should all be as lucky to find someone who is the other half of ourselves. To be as much of a matched set as Dina and Oscar.
He raised his glass.
Congrats, you guys. I'd say I hope you have a long and happy life together, but I don't have to. I know you will.
The guests made a resounding toast, and Theo quickly sat back down. I touched his arm. That was perfect. He looked as if he were going to say something harsh to me, or maybe nothing at all. But he eased a sigh and nodded grudgingly.
Just glad it's done.
The DJ played. People ate and danced and laughed. And I tried not to think about how much I wanted Jonah to be there. How I tried not to look for him, or turn my head and expect to see him there, holding his hand out to me, asking me to dance. Finally, I couldn't take any more sitting and nursing the ache in my heart. Hey, I tapped Theo's shoulder. You promised me a dance.
Sorry,
he said.
Don't feel like it.
Hey, I said again, my voice cracking. I miss him too. Theo looked at me then, his eyes softening the way they had earlier. But this time they stayed soft.
Yeah,
he said. The DJ played Bryan Adams' Everything I Do. I got to my feet and held out my hand. Dance with me. Theo took my hand and let me pull him to his feet. But then he led me to the dance floor, cutting through the swaying couples to an empty spot. His hand was heavy on my waist, and he held our clasped hands out stiffly so they floated in midair. That wasn't going to cut it for me. I needed to hold and be held. I moved in close. Put my head on Theo's chest. Pulled our clasped hands in to rest on his heart. He stiffened, then relaxed against me, still strong and solid, but molding his body to fit mine. That's better, I said, tucking my head under his chin where it fit perfectly.
Yeah,
he said softly.
It is.
Chapter 17. Theo. Thank God. I didn't know I needed this. Not until Casey rested her head against my chest. A communion with another person in pain, the only other person on the planet who'd been as close to Jonah as I'd been. I let my cheek rest against Casey's forehead. We turned in a slow circle, hardly moving, just holding each other. My body should have been rampaging with her pressed against me this way, but nothing sexual was in the warmth flooding me. Only comfort. This woman knew exactly how I felt. I didn't have to say a word. I didn't have to explain why I felt like shit, out of place, or why I'd spent the whole night listening for Jonah's voice, straining to hear him among the crowd, craning my neck to see him laughing with Oscar. He should have been here, to give the toast, to dance with our mother, with Dina, and especially with Casey. It would have broken my damn heart, but I would have given anything in the world to look over and see Casey wrapped in Jonah's arms. Instead, she was in mine, my body absorbing her peace like a sponge soaked up water. Part of me felt like a fraud, like a con man, a consolation prize. The other part of me felt like I was home.
"This feels nice," Casey murmured. "Whenever I'm coming apart, you always hold me together."
"Same for me," I said. "Right now, this feels good." She nestled closer to me, and I held her tighter, not wanting the song to end. If I closed my eyes, I could shut out the world for a little bit longer. But I looked up and found Oscar staring at me, his eyes hard, his brows furrowed in confusion. As Casey and I turned, I saw our table, where my parents were sitting. They were watching us dance, my father with pursed lips, and my mother with a nervous smile for me when our eyes met. I pulled away from Casey, unmolded myself from her body. The song ended at just that moment, but my sudden break startled her. She stared up at me, and whatever sense of peace she'd had during our dance seeped out of those incredible blue eyes, and the real world, the one without Jonah, flooded back in. "Sorry," I muttered lamely. "Sorry, Case.
It's okay," she said softly. "It was nice. For a few minutes, anyway, wasn't it?"
I led her back to the table, and she excused herself to use the restroom. Tanya jumped up to go with her.
"It's so sweet of you to comfort Casey like that," my mom said. "She must be hurting so badly."
I nodded, jaw clenched. All the old pain and anger came roaring back, burning up the last of my peace with Casey. "Yeah," I said, biting off each word. "She is."
"You're wonderful to take care of her," my mother said, looking relieved. "I know Jonah must be glad for that."
"He is," I muttered, easing a sigh, forcing myself to calm down. "I know he is. Because that's what I promised him, to take care of Casey." The other half of Jonah's promise had never felt more impossible to keep. Tanya and Casey came back from the bathroom just in time for the bouquet throwing. Casey tried to refuse, but Tanya tugged her arm.
"It's just silly fun. Or in my case, it's looking for all the help I can get."
Casey laughed a little and relented, but both came back empty-handed. My mother actually looked relieved, as if catching a bunch of damn flowers meant anything.
"I did my best," Tanya said, with mock sourness. "But Oscar had a secret Olympian high jumper on his side of the family. I'm telling you, this was fixed."
Everyone laughed, but Casey only smiled, her eyes distant. "She looks tired," I thought. My phone's face read midnight,
when Oscar and Dina changed into more casual clothes and left for the airport. The guests watched from the front porch of the Centennial House as they drove off in a sedan, just married, soaped up on every window. Some people threw rice, others sugar, an Iranian tradition meant to wish them a sweet life. I leaned over to Casey. "You want to ride back to the hotel? It's late." She smiled wanly.
"God, yes. I am so done."
I drove my parents, Tanya and Casey, back to the hotel in Albany. We made plans to have breakfast the next morning and said our goodnights with a palpable sense of relief the night was over. The first big event in our lives, Jonah wasn't there for. I walked Casey to her room. Outside the door, she paused.
"Now that we're here, I'm strangely awake. I'm going to watch a movie. Want to watch with me?"
"That's a bad idea," said an inner voice, remembering Oscar's hard look and my mother's nervous smile.
"Sure," I said.
Nothing was happening with Casey and me. She was my friend, and she comforted me like nothing and no one ever had before. I wasn't about to let anyone make me feel like shit about it. In her room, I took off my tux jacket and tossed it and the tie onto one of the double beds.
"Tanya was so funny about the bouquet," Casey said, pulling the pins out of her hair on her way to the bathroom. "You should have seen her. When the other girl caught it, I thought Tanya was going to tackle her. I didn't even try for it."
"Why not?"
"For one thing, I'm not in the market. For another, it felt wrong. I had the feeling if I came back to the table with the bouquet, it would have hurt your mom's feelings."
Before I could reply, she came back out and pointed at the TV.
"The hotel has HBO on demand. Can you see if they have Dirty Dancing?"
"Again?" I asked. "I've seen it twice with you. God knows how many times you've seen it alone."
15, Casey grinned. 16's the charm."
"If you insist."
"Thanks. I gotta get out of this dress."
I kicked off my shoes and settled against the headboard, while Casey rummaged in her luggage for something to sleep in. I hoped she didn't need help unzipping her dress. I hoped she did. "Some friend you are." She managed it on her own and came out of the bathroom wearing shorts and a t-shirt. Her hair fell around her shoulders in honey-colored waves from being pinned all day.
"It was a beautiful ceremony, wasn't it?" she said, settling herself on the pillows of her bed.
"Yeah," I said, though I couldn't recall much of it. I'd watched Casey come down the aisle, looking radiant in her dress that made her eyes stand out like sapphires, and just about lost my damn mind. The rest of the ceremony was a blur. I punched in buttons on the remote and called up the movie.
"Oscar and Dina are going to make the most beautiful kids," Casey said after a few minutes.
"Probably," I said.
"How about you? Do you want to get married someday? Have kids?"
"Yeah, I do. You?"
Casey smiled sadly. "I don't know. I never thought I'd be the marrying type, or the kid-having type either. I was too messed up for too long to be responsible like that. But maybe. Someday."
"Someday should be my motto."
"You're actually willing to give up your rep as a ladies' man and settle down?" she asked with a grin that pushed back the sadness for a heartbeat.
"I'm not like that," I said. "Not anymore. I got it out of my system."
"Yeah? The way Oscar talks, I imagine you out with a different girl every night."
"He's just messing around."
She nodded. Well, I can see you getting married.
You can?
Of course. You told me once you like permanence.
Yeah, I said, feeling a familiar fire simmer in Casey's presence, the same I'd felt on the dance floor. A peacefulness and an urge to trust her with the truth. I want something real. She curled toward me on her bed.
I have this image of you holding a baby, tucked in the crook of your arm like a football, while snagging the diaper of another toddler before he tips over and clocks himself on the edge of the table. And you do it with zero stress. Don't even blink an eye.
She laughed a little.
I don't know where that came from.
Oh, yeah? I was going to leave it at that. But it was easy to talk to Casey. Buddy of mine has a new baby. He posts pictures of him napping with her on his chest, holding his finger in her little fist. I could handle that.
How many kids do you want?
At least two, I said. I think they should have a brother or sister. I'm glad I did. Understatement of the century. Casey's smile faded.
I'll bet. I always wanted a brother or sister, too. But Dad could barely stand me as it was. It's not surprising my parents only had one kid.
Have you talked to them lately?
She shook her head. Not since... I don't even know when.
She shrugged, a tight, helpless gesture.
Not a word in a long time.
Such bullshit, I muttered under my breath. The pleasant warmth in my chest from this conversation heated to anger.
What did you say?
I said it's fucking madness they won't even call you back. It had been, what, 6 months since you heard from them?
Longer, she said. I stopped calling them right around the time I met Jonah. We saw them on our trip to San Diego. Did he tell you about it?
I shook my head. He didn't tell me anything, but his face was like a postcard when he got back.
She tilted her head.
I remember he looked content, in a way a man in his position didn't have any cause to look. She stared at me blankly, and I watched my words sink in, spread over her face, and draw a beautiful smile to the surface.
Thank you, Teddy, she said softly.
I waved my hand. Anyway, I said, you saw your parents then? She nodded.
We saw them, she said, literally, from across the street. I didn't want to talk to them. They looked happy, so I let them be. Maybe I should do that permanently.
You want to? I asked gently. She shrugged again, her hands toying her long hair, examining the ends.
Might be easier than being rejected over and over again.
I know what you mean, I said.
You do, don't you?
Casey sat up on her pillows.
This is a personal question, but has Henry always been hard on you?
I nodded. Since Jonah and I were kids, nothing's ever good enough. I get sick of it. I'm so sick of giving a shit about what my old man thinks of me, and yet I can't stop. I snorted. Sounds like such self-pitying bullshit.
Hello, look who you're talking to, Casey said. It's frustrating as hell, right? Like you don't want to care, but you do. A lot.
I looked at her beautiful, open face, her simple words resonating in my heart. Yeah, I do.
Why is he hard on you? She asked. Harder on you than on Jonah?
Definitely not. I never resented Jonah for it. Not even when we were kids.
He stood up for me, but he never pitied me. I could never hate him, or be jealous of him. The pain I kept so tightly locked down threatened to boil out. I kept the lid on tight. Dad's never approved of my art, and he never will. I should just get used to it or get over it. If it weren't for my mom, I'd move the fuck out of Vegas and open a shop somewhere else.
Oh, really? I can think of a city that could use your talents, Casey teased,
and then waved her hands as if she could dispel the words like smoke.
No, Beverly needs you. And I think Henry is reachable. I feel he's got it in him to come around.
What makes you say that?
When I compare him to my dad.
She flumped back on her pillows.
Dad and I are a lost cause. I think my mother and I are becoming one, too. Every day I don't talk to her makes it easier for her to let me go.
Let you go for what? Why did he cut you off? Why has he been a dick to you for so long, and why does she go along with it? She shrugged.
I don't know. I feel like my mother is not telling me something about my dad. When I was a kid, still living at home, he could hardly look at me. Like it hurt his eyes. And sometimes I'd catch Mom staring at me like the way you do an old photograph. With nostalgia.
She shook her head.
I know that makes no sense at all, but I get this vibe from her. As if she missed me. Even though I was right there the whole time.
Maybe she was feeling shitty for not standing up for you, I said.
Maybe. She smiled a little, turned on her side to face me. You and I are a lot alike, Teddy.
I stared at the TV, where the movie was playing without an audience. Baby trying to learn the steps to that first dance with Johnny, nervous and faltering. We both have a parent we can't please, I said.
Yeah.
And we both miss Jonah.
God, yes, I do. It comes over me in waves, unpredictable. It ambushes me when I'm with my friends in New Orleans, or when I was recording that album. Oh, my God. I'd be singing one track, and I think, this is getting easier. Our time together was so short. But instead of feeling bad that it ended, I'm just happy it happened. Like my heart was healing after all. And then I'd ruin the next track completely with a total sniveling, ugly cry. And I'd think, I'm never going to get over this. I'm never going to keep that promise I made to him.
I jerked my head in her direction. What promise? Her blue eyes shone like glass.
He was extracting promises at the end, remember?
I remember, I said quietly. Casey's smile was heartbreaking as she dropped her gaze to the blanket